Bonjour, tous les amis. Soyez bienvenus. Hera. Santé. Santé, the 20th book. It's hard to imagine.
21.
21? Is it the 21st? Well, really, apparently it was hard to imagine, right?
Told you not to drink.
Mm. Yummy. Thank you. I just had a raspberry macaron. Oh, my Lord, they are so good. We have more, so help yourselves by all means. So, Cara and I have been together on this journey since Murder in the Marais. So, I feel as though we've got to be 21 together, right?
21,
if only
yeah.
We were 21 together. What a great idea.
Mentally 21, you know, mentally.
Indeed. And over the years, we've done a lot of interesting things together. At one point, I came to San Francisco and did a talk for the Mystery Writers of America, and Cara was the hostess. That was really fun.
Good.
Yep.
Yeah,
but I have not actually gone to France with Cara. Has anyone here been on one of her escorted trips to France? Do any of you know about her escorted trips to France? Well, why not tell about that?
April in Paris, yeah. What's not to love, you know?
Ma'am, there's seats up here in the front. Nobody wants to sit in the front row.
They're in the book club together, I think. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I lead a group. It's not a tour to Paris. I've met Judy there in April, and we go in the footsteps of Aimé Le Duc. And it's 1 week. When do we go? We're doing the last week of April. And we stay at this great hotel. It's a small French business hotel. Every evening we have apéros, champagne, macaroons also. And we talk about the day, or I get a writer. Actually, this year, Alex Finlay is going to come visit.
Oh, is he really? He's going to be here on June 10th. I already know what we're doing all the way to September. So I know it's really scary, isn't it?
It's
a Monday.
Okay.
Even scarier. I know what day of the week various. I know. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Well, Alex is there with his wife researching. And I said, would you like to talk to my group, you know, and have a discussion?
Sure.
He will. Then Wednesday night, I think we'll have my friend who's a French female fleek come and talk.
Ooh.
Yeah. And, you know, and then during the day, we'll do a walk at Murder à la Villette in the 19th arrondissement. We're going to go into the Marais and do a Marais walk where Amy lives.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to take a cooking class and learn how to make macaroons.
I'm going to call them macarons. You can call them macaroons if you want to. They even knew when I went to Jenna's Patisserie at 7:02 this morning. They open early. They even... Even they knew what I said when I said macaron, when they said, you know, how many flavors. I don't know if you looked, but I don't know if John put it out there, but they actually gave me a little card that described all, and I didn't take the blue and the purple because I thought they looked disgusting, but I did. I'm sorry, they might have been great, but I just couldn't bring myself to eat a blue cookie. I was like, really? Oh, right. So are you hearing an echo? I'm not sure. I think I just need to run over there and tell
Pat. Yeah,
I hear
something in the background.
Yeah, the sound is coming out. Hang on just one sec.
And help yourself to more macaron.
Hey, Pat.
You know? Honestly, they look great.
We can hear the soundtrack. Can you turn it down,
yeah,
please? Thank you.
I'm just getting to Paris in time to organize with my friend Meg. We're going to walk it out. And my friend Meg, who I went to school with, has great organizational capabilities, unlike me. So she said, Cara, I'll organize your trip. And I said, that's a great idea. I'll pay your ticket. So it works for us. So, yeah, and after, I don't know, because I'm very excited that I didn't tell you, I'm going to be a grandma.
Wow.
And the babies do... the last day of our trip in Paris. So I may be zooming back, or I may be, right? First babies can be late. I may be hanging out in Paris until it's time to
Is the
to
baby go. In San Francisco?
The baby's in Denver.
Oh, Denver. Well, at least it's a direct flight from Charles de Gaulle, so not too
yeah.
bad.
Yeah,
you all know that Phoenix is gaining a direct... You know what? There are chairs here in the front. I know everybody's embarrassed, but it'd be really nice
come
if you just...
Come on up front if you'd like.
Come on up front. I always feel like this is like, you know, teaching students that the front row, Occasionally, I have actually taken away the chairs in the front row, making you the front row. But so thank you very much for doing that. I brought up the trip because the first time that Kara, if I remember correctly, made the New York Times bestseller list was the year that she started the trips. I do have that right, don't I?
This woman remembers everything. Yes, yes, totally. We offered a free trip to Paris. You could win a free trip. And it was,
There we are. Yeah. So as you know, the concept of this series is to tour around the various arrondissements de Paris.
Right.
And so here we are at La Villette.
La Villette.
How have you missed it all the way up till now? Have you missed, how have you picked them over the course of time? Does the story determine the arrondissement, or do you pick an arrondissement and then create a story to go with it?
At the beginning, with Murder in the Marais, can you hear me? Is that okay? With the Marais, of course, it was about my friend's mother who was a hidden Jewish child during the German occupation. And I heard that story and I wanted to write about the Marais. So that was just dictated it. The second one, my editor said, where is Aimé Le Duc going next? And I said, excuse me? And she said, because I had just sold one book. She said, well, you are writing a series, aren't you? And I lied and said, of course, Laura, I am writing a series, you know. And I was
many authors are surprised to discover it's only if the first book does well that the editor will say, and are you writing a series?
So I was staying in Belleville. I said, how about Belleville? She said, Belleville, Illinois? I said, no, Laura, no, it's Belleville in the 20th arrondissement, you know, and it's where Edith Piaf sang on the streets. And she goes, oh, okay, good, go with that. And I'm like, okay.
Why not? You know, that's so funny. If you live in the Midwest, as I did before, many years ago, before I went off to college in Palo Alto, you know that we butchered the French. So, you know, there's like Versailles, Kentucky, or Prairie du Chien, Iowa. Or
Paris, Texas.
Yeah, or Cairo, Illinois, you know. I mean, it just goes on and on. I mean, I'm sure it's all because of the French trappers, you know, they came down the Mississippi from Canada and named things, you know, in French. But anyway, yeah, Belleville is another, and you know, there are French names mangled all over the United States, but it's pretty hefty along the Mississippi areas.
And the Sentier, the third book, came about because I was walking through the Marais and I missed the bus and I got lost and I was like, what is this place? You know, the wholesale garment district at the time and all this and the hookers. Do you remember, what's that film with Shirley MacLaine? The sweet, she was a hooker on the Paris street. It's an old film with Jack Lemmon. He was the gendarme. Irma La Douce, thank you. Shirley MacLaine actually went to do research with the hookers in Saint-Denis and hung out on the street with them, you know, and she said in an interview.
And there, did she take money?
I didn't know. I don't know her.
So
I don't
have the full experience. She should have charged the fee.
When I started doing research, one of the ladies of the night asked me for money, and I said, "Can I just ask you questions?" She goes, "Everything costs here." And I went, "Okay, you know, I couldn't pay." And then she was like, "Oh, I'll talk to you. You look harmless." I said, "I want no service from you. No, thank you." But
competition.
Yeah. Oh. You're nice, Judy. But yeah, so every book just sort of happened. And then I would find a place and I would discover it. I've killed people in 21 arrondissements in Paris. I've done crime everywhere, but I realized I did two in one arrondissement. So that's why this is the 21st.
All right. So we'll get to the end. We can ask her what she's writing next because this, as far as I know, it's not a sign-off of your authorial career, even if you're winding up M.A., right?
Never say never, right?
Right. Or who knows? They might add an arrondissement de Paris, and then there you'd be. Right. Or you could branch out to the suburbs. You know,
exactly.
We could go to Vaux-le-Vicomte. We could go to Fontainebleau. You know, I once had to fly back. I had to make a 23-hour round trip back from Paris to get an award in New York. From the Mystery Writers of America, and even though I said, I'm going to be in France, and I really don't want to come back, they said, this board is only this board, and next year could be a different board, so you have to come for this particular award. And there was a little first class airline only from, I'm trying to remember, New Jersey. So it would have been whatever the airport there is. Newark. Thank you. Sorry, it's my age. From Newark to, it turned out, Orly, not Charles de Gaulle.
I love Orly.
It's very small. And yes. And there's possibly the smallest motel ever created at the Orly Airport. My husband and I had to turn sideways to even pass each other in this room, which is like... But anyway, we had to drive up and stay at Orly and fly back and then 23 hours altogether to be back in Paris. But the good news was, and we wouldn't have done it otherwise, is we arrived back on May 1st, which is the one night that Vaux-le-Vicomte, which is the estate that inspired Versailles, was open at night and for their fireworks and music display and all. We never would have done it otherwise.
And I was just there and I sent you the photo,
yes,
remember?
Yes, you did.
The fireworks.
Yep. It was a magical evening. I mean, amazing. It really was. And then while we were there, I thought we might as well go to Fontainebleau, which is also fabulous. So there's wonderful stuff very close to Paris. So you could actually branch, I'm going to plotter books. You could actually branch out into, great sites close to Paris that MA could get to, for example, on the train.
Yes, and Vaux-le-Vicomte with fireworks, and the music, and the champagne. It was amazing. It's like from May 1st to October 1st or something, so you've got to time it right. But
it's an incredible estate. And the man
there.
Who built it was a banker and made the mistake of inviting Louis XIV to visit. The same thing that happened in England when, I'm trying to remember, was it Cromwell? Anyway, invited Henry VIII to his palace, which of course meant that the monarch decided he'd rather own the palace. And it was the same with Vaux-le-Vicomte.
Yeah, he got to spend one night there, actually. Yeah. And he was put in prison. And it survived the revolution, one of the descendants.
Right. You can see the novel taking shape, right?
We're Thank all, you.
Yeah, we can all go, Le Vin d'Eau, here it is, Émile Le Deux. I know.
Cold case revolution style.
There could be bones in the garden. I know. Really great stuff. But anyway, so we are in La Villette, and you've decided to make M.A. a murder suspect. So why don't you tell us? Because this all happens in the front couple of chapters. No spoiler here.
Right, right. Yeah, so the La Villette is basically the 19th arrondissement. So it's kind of cut in half by the canal. There's the canal up from the Seine and through the Bastille and up through there and by the Canal Saint-Martin, and you get up and then it branches out here. Napoleon designed all this with barge traffic, and I'm looking at Diane Freeman because she writes historical, and I'm like, I know you're checking everything I say.
But you found a way, Diane. No Googling.
It was funny, Diane and I were having emails because she was in Paris asking me, where should I go to check? I said, Diane, I know this, but it's not my era, but maybe you could try this. But anyway, apart from that, I still feel guilty about not answering that email. So what was I saying? So the 19th arrondissement is really, it was a huge industrial hub because the big barges would come down and there were biscuit factories, sugar refineries, very working class. And then there's parts that are beautiful, the Butte Chaumont, the Parc Butte Chaumont. So it was a huge arrondissement. So anyway, we're in 2002 and we're using euros because in most of the books they've paid in francs, which are much more sexy. But now, and you can still smoke in the cafes. And Amy is working undercover. She's my private investigator. She does computer security. She's a specialist. She's working undercover in a startup that has been funded by the 19th Arrondissement Initiative. So locals are working there. And she's really unhappy that one of the women is being mistreated. And there's a very toxic staff work environment. And Isabel is a cleaner. She was a friend of Amy's cousin. She was a junkie, and she's clean, and she's supporting her brother. Backstory, Amy's ex, Melak, who's the biological father of her daughter, Chloe, 3 years old, is hounding her to get custody and move to Brittany. And for Amy Leduc, that train left a long time ago. And Melak is pushing for this, and Amy is struggling to be a mother. She's working undercover. She's got to run her detective agency with Renee Friant, her partner. And now she's really inclined to like bad boys. for once she's involved in a sort of good relationship with Loic Bellon, you know, who knew? And now Milac is hounding her. And she's like, I just, you know, maybe I should deal with this once and for all. So he's been leaving these voicemail messages waiting for her at night right here on the canal to try to catch her before she whizzes by on her scooter or goes to the metro. And he leaves this voicemail message as she's walking down. Aimé, I've just seen a ghost. And she's concerned because that's really unlike him. And he was in counterterrorism. He's a really basic guy. So when she goes down to the canal, she finds his body. And she's set up to be the murderer, his murderer. And she has to go on the run. But this also exacerbates her when she's hit on the head, her blindness that we saw in Murder in the Bastille. She was blind in that book. So she's had a big knock to her head. It's very dangerous. It's touch and go. So she's in the hospital, back in the hospital she was in the Bastille. And she realizes she's being set up for Milac's murder.
Yeah, but her memory is fairly fuzzy.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's often an element in crime fiction that a character can't remember what happened. It adds a whole lot of suspense, makes them unreliable as a narrator, or also makes them look guiltier than they might be, or can't defend themselves.
Right. She just knows this isn't looking good. So she's got to go on the run. And of course, she's got a 3-year-old. She's got a business to run. So life is just really getting difficult for her. And she ends up going with the dark side a little bit, going to visit Isabelle, who runs who lives in a biker tattoo bar in the 19th arrondissement and is selling contraband cigarettes on the side. Now, this is true because there are Paris Hell's Angels. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, right? And I found out about this. I went to the biker tattoo bar, which is now very different from what it was. But I was introduced to this by a man, and I want to say a grand merci to Georges Gio, if you are watching in Paris. I said I would thank him because he took me to the biker tattoo bar. You know, he's 80 years old, but he said, you need to see this. And it was amazing because I was very lucky to meet people who had lived in the arrondissement all their life, raised their family. It's very residential, kind of working class residential, and people have long memories. And one other thing that was very, really changed the course of my story was that I knew a policeman, Patrick, in the Brigade Criminelle, hello Patrick, who lives in the 19th arrondissement. And he said, I want to walk around with you and show you some places where I live. And we were walking on this street and we heard the news that a serial killer had just been discovered. He had eluded the police for more than 30 years. More than 30 years. And his composite sketch was on the wall in the commissariat. They'd been looking at it. And he said, you know, his first known victim was here. And we walked by the apartment building where a young 8-year-old girl was brutally killed in the basement of their building, the family's apartment. And I thought, this is, you know, and people were talking about this in the cafes. You know, there's very much a collective memory in this area. And, you know, France is a little different from us with, you know, serial killers. This was huge. Not that it's not huge anywhere, but because this killer had eluded the police for more than 30 years, there was something about people were, you know, that guilt or that fear was still there. And so finally, this man was discovered. It was, I don't know, it was just like this community kind of working it through in a way, getting through their grief, finally putting some closure to it. So it was like this story on this street. We're in the cafe. I see the building. I was like, Patrick said, you need to pay attention to this for your story. I go, okay. It had taken a different route than I would have. But again, so Aimé needs to deal with this and the echoes of the past. You know, the ghosts are never far away in Paris. I'm sure a lot of you feel that as well. You know, they're there. Maybe they're not so recent past, I mean, the more recent past, but I really felt that added another dimension. And of course, Amy's dealing with her daughter. If she cannot, you know, find who this killer is and bring them to justice, she's on the hook, you know. What if she loses her daughter? That's a huge fear, I think, all of us.
Well, since her father is dead, I mean, that's the problem. And
right.
If Amy, and then the daughter would be put into foster care, you know, and that's not a happy solution.
That's
how
right.
old is Chloe at this point?
Three. She's okay, 3 years
so
old.
She's still way too young to have any say in what happens to her.
Right, right. And Amy's always feeling guilty. You know, if she was up on the farm, she'd be growing vegetables and they'd be, you know, yeah. going out in a boat. But her daughter Chloe's in the preschool around the corner from her on Ile Saint-Louis, you know, which where Amy went. So it's kind of up and down, you know. But
so when Malak was trying to go to Brittany, with which, if you all know, is the farthest west part of France, and Celtic by background, they have a different language, a lot of it. A place, if you watch any French TV, there's some really great crime dramas on French television. I watch a lot. Do not watch the one called 31 Graves or 30 Graves or something, which is possibly the worst script I've ever seen. It made no sense. But the scenery was great. There's a man called Jean-Luc Banalek, who actually is a German and works for Von Holtzbrink, which I think is hilarious. So the TV is German, but the novels are French, and I think they're wonderful if you read them. It starts with The Murder in Brittany, I think it is, and there'll be a new one out at the end of April. So you learn a lot about Brittany, which has a wonderful culture, lots of music, lots of, you know, amazing fish, great
crepes.
Oyster capital. Yeah. So how would custody work? I mean, could Chloe have gone, would have been like alternate weeks? Or, I mean, what would have happened if Malak had been alive? Would Chloe have split her time then between Brittany and Paris?
Well, remember, they were never married.
No, I know.
But
how would he even gain custody?
Well, that's it. I mean, it's a gray area. I asked a lawyer about that. And, of course, this happened in 2002, so now it might be different. But, you know, it was a gray area, and, you know, it could go back and forth. But it doesn't really make a lot of sense for them to do it like that. But
well, it's a pretty good distance, especially for a three-year-old who can't really just, like, travel on the train by herself.
That's right. Yeah. So maybe summers. But, you know, Malak had really distanced himself when she was born. So,
yeah.
And then this was another story, and came back with another wife. And so, you know, Malak hasn't really earned his stripes, you know, to be a great child care minder. But he's very good with his daughter. So there's that. So it's not an answer that had a clear, you know, way forward, you know.
Okay, I just wanted to clear that up because, you know, personally, I think spending time in Brittany would be fabulous. So I was having a little trouble with, you know, why she's so resistant to
it. But there's no cafe in those cow pastures. I don't know.
No, but steak frites appears to be the national dish despite all the, you know, the great fish and so forth.
Yeah.
So there you are. Right. So there are going to be repercussions from this book that are going to echo after this particular investigation closes. And so you're just sort of leaving it there, right? We won't really know, unless you happen to write another story, for example, at Vaux-le-Vicomte, about Amy and Chloe and whatever. But, you know, that's not bad for you readers. You can sketch it in yourselves, what you'd like to see happens.
It's a mystery.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I never thought when I started writing that I would get a contract for the next book or the next, or that I would keep going and write crime in 21, well, 20 arrondissements and two twice. I just never thought I would get to do that, you know. And I hope, my experience is different from many people's, but it's always been a book at a time. Maybe that it's kept it fresh for me, because I really didn't know where the story was going or what would be happening or why or how. And I sort of feel like when I get my ticket, I get on the plane, I'm Amy's agent. I'm going to look for a story. I'm going to find an investigation for her. And that is my job, you know.
Do then outline the story, or do you just wing it as you go?
Do I wing it as I go? Often I wing it, yeah. But finding the place, you know, is important. What Patrick and I discovered on this walk about, you know, was just incredible. It doesn't always happen like that. You know, sometimes I'll find something in the archives and I go, this is really like 3 hours in Paris. that. Well, that's. Does he?
So, why don't you talk to us for a moment about your two books, about so far two books about World War II,
sure.
In which Paris is involved.
Sure. So, Night Flight to Paris is set in 1942, and Kate Reese is the protagonist. We've met her in 3 Hours in Paris, which is set in the early days of the occupation, the German occupation, 1940, which was a very little which was a very sparsely documented time, because the Germans walked into Paris. They weren't even printing newspapers. The government had fled to, I think, Bordeaux. It was this time, and it was when Hitler came to Paris for 3 hours. This is documented. You can watch it on YouTube. He came to Paris for 3 hours. He did a tour, and he left never to return. Didn't have parade down the Champs-Élysées, nothing. So I was like, why? Why would this, he loved Paris, right? He loved the opera. I mean, he was a Francophile in his own way. He'd been an art student. So when I was reading about this, I saw that Arno Breker, his sculptor, and Albert Speer, we all have heard of him, the architect and the armaments minister, had come to Paris with Adolf, and you can see the picture. Speer on one side, Breker on the other, you know, the Fuhrer, and behind them, the Eiffel Tower. This is documented. They did the tour. It was on a newsreel. And after the war, both men survived, wrote their own memoirs. And Albert Speer said it was a week later than Arno Breker did in both of their books. And they were both with them. They both gave different dates for this trip. And I said, I'm not a historian, but there's something fishy here. Why was this never disputed? What could have happened? And what if, is for a writer, is like, what could have happened? What if there wasn't an attack on Hitler? What if someone tried to assassinate him? After all, 1940, we didn't know what was happening. The French were, they could have risen up in the streets, but they didn't. So I thought, what if there was an assassin? And what if it was a American? And what if it was a girl? Because I wanted a girl assassin. I've read so many. My father had a whole shelf of, Ken Follett and all these wonderful world, the Rogue Mail and all these wonderful books. And I'm like, why couldn't a girl do that, And then I did research, and there was a whole brigade or troop regiment, whatever, of female Russian snipers who had incredible kills.
Stephen Hunter actually wrote one of his great sniper novels about the Russian snipers. I think it was a Russian woman who had the most kills of anybody during World War. It's a great book. It's called Sniper's Honor, if you've not read it. It's fabulous.
And she came to the White House. Eleanor Roosevelt invited her and took her on a tour. So she was, yeah. So anyway, I said, yeah, so she'll be American. And that was 3 hours in Paris. So then I was like, well, what would Kate, and her name is Kate Reese. She's from Oregon. She grew up in the back country. She had 5 brothers, learned to shoot and what do you call it, skin animals, skin game, to eat during the Depression. And she learned French at the Alliance Française, in the small Alliance Française in Oregon, got a scholarship and went to Paris, 37. Before the war, when things looked like maybe there would be peace, and met a Welshman who whisked her off to the UK, and they had a daughter, and tragedy happened. I won't say any more. But Kate has now vengeance against the Germans and goes to Paris on this sort of suicide mission. But now, wait, I was talking about this one. Now it's 42. And one of the women that she trained with at the special agent school up in Scotland is in trouble in Paris. And she asks for Kate's help because she only trusts Kate. So Kate goes to Paris. She's got a threefold mission to bring penicillin cultures to the Pasteur Institute for the sick, hidden Jewish children. They did hide Jewish children in the Pasteur Institute, fact. And then to pick up, to take out a target that her friend was pointing her to, and then to get her friend out in, you know, on the airfields near Fontainebleau at night by moonlight. But boy, things happen. And then they end up in Cairo for a bit, but you'll have to read the book, so.
Are you planning to continue Kate's adventures?
I don't know. There's a lot of war left. We're in 42.
Lots of war left.
A lot
right.
of war left.
So what are you thinking about writing?
Well, between us, what happens in Scottsdale stays in Scottsdale.
Right.
Actually, I have a manuscript with my editor in New York, where they go, you know, they all go to New York, and I hope she's going to graduate and become a, you know, a full-fledged approved manuscript. It's set post-war France in post-liberation, 1944. And then there's a lot of things that happen, and it's about what happens in France. It's not just the GIs handing out Hershey bars and champagne and the women, you know, kissing them on the tanks. There was a very other side to the liberation. Yeah.
Well, there was, because there were a lot of collaborators. There were resistance fighters. There were people who said they were resistance fighters that actually weren't. France has a long, long history of anti-Semitism. If you know French history, all the Dreyfus affair is an example of it. But much of the way people behaved during the war got sanitized, or they tried to claim it differently afterward. But you know, if the whole question is to survive, it's hard to judge people for what they did. If they were opportunists. I mean, that was one of the problems in the Marais, was that people wanted to seize their Jewish neighbors, you know, homes and possessions. Yep. It was just rank opportunism.
Right.
Turned them in and so forth.
There's an Easter egg in this book. Do you all know what Easter eggs are? Mm. An Easter egg in this book, because when I was researching the 19th, I found out about that there was the first female filmmaker, French woman, Alice Guy. Jodie Foster made a great documentary about it. I think it's on Netflix or something. The first woman who had a studio, one of her studios here. I think she was in Lyon too. And so anyway, one of her places is here, and there is a plaque on it. And I was like, so there was a French woman in the, you know, when they were like 3 minutes or something, and they were like, you know, hand colored. One of the first French filmmaker, a woman, after the Daguerres and the Lumiere brothers was there. And I went, So there is an element of film in the manuscript. And Cannes, the film festival of Cannes in the early days, you know, when Sophia Loren was Gina Lola, Brigida, Anita, they were all out there.
All the Italians, not the French, but they were, right?
Yes, I'm just trying to think who the French were. Brigitte Bardot, you know, well, she'd be very young, but yes. So we have we also have that about a French film business, you know, run by women.
Basically, you're sticking to France. I mean, you're not, well, I mean, she could branch off, right? She could be writing about Denmark or Italy or even San Francisco, where she lives, right?
I'm sorry, I don't know how to turn this off. I'm guilty of that, Barbara. Yes, writing about France. Sorry, this is...
No, I didn't. I didn't mean it in a question of guilt. I just meant that, you know, since you are so comfortable writing about France, you're interested in staying in France.
I am. I really am. I love France.
I don't know if any of you have read Mark Pryor, Pryor, but he has a wonderful series about... was it Henri? I'm trying to remember his name. Lefort, isn't it? Right, thank you. Now he switched to a different character during the war, but
right.
He's written, Henri Lefort was an official at the American Embassy in security, I think it is, and anyway, investigated, and there was always an historical element, you know, of French history, and those are wonderful books. Janet Skisley and Charles wrote...
Charles, I love her books.
And I just... emailed her. I'm hoping she'll actually come and visit us in July. But anyway, we'll do a Zoom event if nothing else.
She lives in Paris.
But she's talking about coming over. I pointed out to her that Air France is doing a nonstop flight from Charles de Gaulle to Phoenix, which I hope will they're in financial difficulties, so I'm hoping that won't fall through. You probably saw that Air France and KLM are having a serious financial crisis, but we'll hope that it actually works out.
But, you know, I want to say, too, when I'm researching, like, this book, and there's all these incredible historical details that don't fit in the story, but they're lodged in my brain, but it's like these stories of the war that just Mark and Janet, you were talking about, those stories of the war are coming out now, and these people who've lived them are passing, but some of these documents are just now being declassified, especially Kew Gardens in London and the ones in Paris. You know, this is, 80 years, you know? And so now we're hearing newer stories or untold stories of, excuse me, especially women who did this work, signals intelligence in Cairo. I mean, there was a lot of papers that came out that I could use in this book. But women played a role. I mean, they weren't, you know, on the field. They were doing just as important, I will argue, work behind the scenes, you know, or manning the towers, you know, or the whatever you call them.
But weren't a lot of them actual resistance fighters?
And Britain and France. Yeah, but what is resistance? You know, what is resistance?
Well, basically carrying documents and organizing blowing up bridges and sabotaging where they could and all that good stuff.
But isn't it an act of resistance if you have three children and you're living in Lyon and you're, you know, you have to feed them, your husband's at the front, and then your father asks you, will you take this small package to outside Lyon on the bicycle to deliver to someone, and you don't ask him what's in it, you just do it, and you've got your child strapped on back and you deliver it, and there is, you go through a German checkpoint and they look at you and go, oh, just woman with her kid, go. She gets to the point and then she hands over the package, which are guns, and she cycles back. I met a woman who did this, and she, I said, how could you do it? You know, you have children. She said, I did what had to be done. You know, my husband was at the front. What am I going to do? I wasn't going to blow up a bridge, but that I could do. So
didn't we watch the new movie with Coco Chanel, about Coco Chanel and Christian Dior? Mm-hmm. And there's a very moving scene about exactly that. I think it's Christian Dior's younger sister is taking a message by bicycle, and the Germans catch up with her. Yeah. You know, it's a horrifying scene. So,
right.
Yeah.
Small moments of courage that are not huge, you know,
sure,
but very important.
Right. Well, how about questions? Because I think we probably said all we can say about the book or whatever.
Where do you do most of your research for, as you just said, release of, you know, previously unreleased documentation and stories? National archives, or going to maybe if it's, you know, Murder in the Marais, then it's some Jewish archives. So is it mostly American archives or going to France?
Can you repeat your question?
Where do I do most of my research? Is it in France at the archives, or at the Jewish archives, or in the U.S.? I've done a lot of research at the British, Imperial War Museum, and going below in Churchill's war rooms, which was amazing. Maybe some of you, that's amazing. I mean, it's left as it was. In Paris, I go to the Bois de Vincennes, the Fort de Vincennes, because they have all the, they have the archives of that period, not where Diane went, but a different time, you know, the more current. I've gone up to the other archives they moved it up in Saint-Ouen now. Anyway, I go through French archives, I'm a member of several historic societies of each arrondissement. I couldn't join this one because they didn't meet very often. I'm a member of the 10th arrondissement, but I met people in this, but I also do, I like verbal, you know, spoken. And so I met people who lived there during the war through two nurses who do home health care in the 19th arrondissement. And they said, I give the insulin shot to my 90-year-old guy and I have for years. Do you want to talk to him? And I went, yes, please. And she introduced me. So it was amazing to hear this man talk about being a little boy, you know, when all this was happening. So that's a special kind of research. And of course, it's colored by his life and his memories, but I understand that. But also I find documents. Some people give me wonderful books. I'm looking at Judy right here, who finds something at the flea market. I find research everywhere. Again, I'm writing fiction. So it's taking that wonderful real truth and spinning it a different way or changing it to that story. But I did hold some documents. It was in Saint-Ouen that were amazing that I touched these documents that this woman had written in a concentration camp that they were leaving, the troop, they were being liberated. And she was gone into the camp's office, found the documents, and was trying to write down, she was French, all the French women that had survived or the ones who didn't, to bring it back to France to tell the families. And I was holding this paper. I mean, that's amazing. But, you know, that wasn't something I knew I would find. So, you know, sometimes it's being there at the right place at the right time or being in the wrong place at the right time. So I like that, you know. And again, I'm writing fiction, but I love good historical crime fiction. And Janet Skezly and Charles writes wonderful books. If you haven't read them,
that's only one so far. Oh. I think the new one's coming out in May or June.
Okay, there was one with the Odessa. Did you ever read that one about Odessa? It was great.
Was that her last? I thought that
was
she's
like her first book.
Yeah, well, I'll have to look it up. I'm probably wrong. Okay,
might know
carry on.
Hi. Looking beyond April in Paris with you and the group, and this is a loaded question, do you plan on returning to Paris and or France maybe in the fall to do more research to include Ami?
After the April in Paris trip, do I plan to return in the fall to do research for Amy? It's a mystery, Judy. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Merci. You know, it's always, you know, I always buy these little notebooks, you know, and I just write things down in them, like a word or somebody talking on the bus, and I love the way they speak, or a child gets on and is, you know, asking for their goûter, you know, and after school. And it's just these little moments that don't go in every book. You know, they don't belong in one book, but they could go in another book, or, I mean, another story. So, you know, it's always, you know, it's dangerous when you're with somebody who's always writing down what you say.
I've looked up Janet just to make sure. All right, she wrote The Paris Library, which is the book I'm thinking about, but she also wrote a book.
She has a new one.
Called Miss Morgan's Book Brigade.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember, is that the one that's coming out? Yep, that's the one that's coming out next. But
there's one in Odessa. It's a gorgeous book. She wrote it quite a while. Anyway, she lives in Paris with her. Yes. No, Janet lives in Paris. And
it's called Moonlight in Odessa.
Moonlight in Odessa.
Finally
I was
got
close.
To the right place,
okay.
Right?
I love that
and
book.
It appears the librarian, De Rue de Picardie. Mm. So maybe she has two books. Odessa was 2009, so maybe two. I'm only bringing it up because I think The Paris Library is a book that you all would really enjoy if you have not read it. And it very much fits in with the sort of thing that Cara writes about. Charles, Charles, first name is Janet.
Did you have a question?
Yes, are these books translated into other languages? And if so, have you been to such as, for this book, Germany or other places? I guess Britain wouldn't count when Charles translates.
Well, actually, I did tour Britain.
But I just wondered if you had presented these books.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's 21, so every time there's different things that happen. So I've sold foreign rights to different countries. I did do a library tour in UK, which was really fun, when it was Soho Youth Constable. Anyway, so it was really great going to these. I got to go to Newcastle, and I got to say, "Who's bringing coals to Newcastle?" And they didn't think that was very funny, but I was really wanted to say that. Some lovely libraries, but that was a while ago. When I go to Paris, I usually do an event at an English language bookstore, and I've done things with Mark Pryor, I've done with Janet, you know, so there are some English language bookstores, so yeah. But primarily, I have American readers, so yeah.
I took my daughter to France in September, and
noticed on our step apps that we were walking like 10 miles a day, and it blew me away. So I got home, and I had a complete shift, just a lifestyle shift, that instead of driving my dog to get groomed down the street, I walk. So now I'm up to 5 miles every single morning. So my problem is, okay, what do I do with myself during 5 hours? I have a dog, and music does not work for me. The driving music doesn't work. So I happened upon your first book, and I love it because it motivates you to keep walking.
Running!
Farther along the canal, I could go the whole canal all into Phoenix, and because you're always wanting to solve the next mystery. And
oh, great.
Where other books, it doesn't work the same, at least for me. So I'm just whipping through them. And then I ran into the problem with Audible books, that there aren't that many in the Phoenix, in the Maricopa system, of your Audible books. So I got my daughters to get library cards. So now I have the Washington, D.C. area and the California area, and that's how I get all your books. But what struck me is, I am French. I was born in France. The language that you throw in, you know, the terminology, and like you said, goûter and all these, and mec and all these words that I know, is really fun. Then since I couldn't get a book, I read ahead. It was the rouge, the lantern rouge with the chinois.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different narrator. And it was driving me nuts because she says quartier.
Can we talk later about that?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But it was just jarring because it was so pleasant. And then I jumped several books ahead, and it's like, you know, I'm walking. It's like, yeah.
You know, I should tell you about Libro.fm, where you can download all these books for practically nothing all the time. I mean, they're a partner of ours. It's called Libro, Libro.fm, and that is your source for audiobooks. It's really easy.
And you support an independent bookstore, right? So.
Well, yeah, but
yeah.
I wasn't mentioning it. We get like, you know, 7 cents or something per download, so I don't really care about that. But most of our staff and lots of, you know, people do that. And one reason we stream these events is that audiobook readers and digital book readers can still enjoy listening to the author, because if you're here, it's about books, right? But it's really nice to be able to hit the rest of Kara's audience and do it that way. But if you all don't know about Libro FM, it's a really good source if you want to listen to books.
Is there any... go ahead.
When books, they bring an American in, I've often wondered what the relationship, if you brought a French-Canadian whose French is very different.
Yes.
And, you know, in a story and stuff, because it would be, you know, they both speak French, and yet
it's different.
Whole different thing growing up, you know, being in Canada. And they were, you know, in the war with the Americans.
Quebecois French is entirely different than, you know,
yeah,
Paris
okay.
French, right? I've had trouble navigating yeah, that part of, I'm going back in September, and, you know, you can at least read it, you know, even if you can't speak it.
French, there's a French, there's a French series, there's a Canadian Quebecois series that's on in France, and I've watched it, and it's Quebecois, and they have subtitles because they don't understand the Quebecois. Sorry, go ahead. That's a great question. You know, are you talking about Murder in the Marais?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I wrote that in the 1990s, 1993, 94, and when I tried to get in touch with the Jewish Center in Paris, I had to write letters. You know, they aren't where they are now, and it was, you know, different. I was writing letters back and forth. And a lot of people did not want to talk about that time. You know, it's a very, you know, and who am I? I wasn't published. I'm just a nosy American. So I found some friend went to the Jewish the library in San Francisco, and I said I would like to find, before Schindler's List, I would like to find someone who may have had an experience growing up, you know, in the Marais during this time. And so the librarian said, well, she showed me some files. She said, these are some histories. And if they, you know, I said, could I contact them? And she said, I will get in touch and ask them if you can contact them. And I said, fine, that's great. You know, we're not doing Google. There's no email, okay? And there's no Schindler's List. And so I wrote a letter, and 2 days later, I got a phone call. And it was from Denise, who was one of the women. I didn't know her name. She said, you wrote me a letter, and I'm answering you. And I said, oh, Denise, I thought, you know, from your account that you lived in Texas. Can I call you back? This is a toll call, right? Remember, we used to have to pay long distance? And she said, why? I live in Daly City, you know, South San Francisco. I said, really? She said, would you talk to me? She said, come over. So I went, I sat at Denise's kitchen table, and since 1995, I have known Denise. She passed away last year, and I went to her funeral, and it was a very sad thing because I usually brought her chocolate from Paris, and you know, and she loved a special kind, and I hadn't brought it back last time, so it was very sad that I went to her grave, and I said, I'm bad, I did not bring you your chocolate, but next time. But I discovered things that I didn't know about the Jewish tradition. I'm not Jewish. I worked in a Jewish preschool. And I asked Jewish people like Denise, people in the preschool, if this was correct, you know, sitting Shiva. And I had written that scene and I got it all wrong until a Jewish friend said, no, it wouldn't happen like this. And then are they Orthodox? And so I had to navigate that not knowing and being, you know, honestly inquisitive and saying, can you please help me? So I don't write it for a Jewish audience, I just write a story that happens to Jewish people. So I try not to, this, I don't mean to sound offensive here, but I just feel if I get it wrong, someone's going to tell me, you know, and please do. I've done lots of book groups and, you know, the book's been out 20 years. No one has really expressed that. But, you know, if they did, I would certainly say, let's talk about it. You know, I don't, you know, it's a fiction book. I'm not, all I can do is write the story and what my friend's mother told me. And, you know, if I get it wrong, let's talk about it, you know. What, because there's an arc with Amy's mother and her father and, you know, we find out what happens with them. What, how did I masterfully plan that ahead with this great organizational capability I have? No. I just knew that Amy's wound was that her father had died under mysterious circumstances and there was a cover-up and she was going to find out about it, which she makes little progress in every book. Her mother disappeared, left her, and that has left a big hole in her, and she's always wondering why. And let's see, Murder in the Sentier dealt with Amy's mother a lot. So I always thought if I only get to write 3 books, we're going to go to the arc with Amy's mother. But then when they said they wanted another one, I went, oh, we're not going to fill all those. We're going to leave a few blanks here so I could continue with the story. I think Murder on the Quay, which is my prequel to the whole series, why Amy becomes a detective. There's a lot of information that I have been storing that came out in that one. And it came out much later.
Actually, almost everybody that writes a long series eventually writes a prequel because you had to elect to start your character's life at a certain moment, right? And there's always going to be stuff that inevitably you don't talk about because you're moving forward. But then as the series develops, people go back. Laurie King, my favorite is Charles Finch, who started out to write a prequel and then wrote a trilogy, a prequel trilogy, because the story was so interesting. But he did it after he'd written, like, I don't remember, at least 15, what do you think, Diane? 15 books or something. So he already knew the future of all these people, and it was fascinating. Michael Connelly made that decision after book four with Harry Bosch. You know, it's not at all uncommon to write prequels, and I think usually very satisfying for readers.
A lot of people ask me about Amy's grandfather, you know, and will he have his own book? And I went... He deserves his own book. In a way, he's, you know, Claude Leduc, the bon vivant. I don't know.
Do you have any questions over there, young Patrick?
I do, actually. A couple online. Jade wanted to know what your writing style looks like in terms of what does it look like the day in the life of Cara Black writing her book? And also, a few people online wanted to know how to sign up for your tour.
How to sign up for my
tour?
April in Paris. Please just go to carablack.com, my website. It has April in Paris, and please click on it. We're sold out, but next year, let us know. We have a list, please. And there's a lot of information on that. And what does the day in the life of me writing? Well, is it on book tour or is it at home? On book tour, it's in airports. Of course, like many people, I get up, have some espresso, and get to work. I don't have a dog to walk anymore, so there's that excuse gone. But I just try to sit down, and over the years, I think when my son was little, I would write in carpool line and then at a lacrosse game. But now, because I don't have to do that, I think for me, it's really important to set a goal. Some writers are like 1,000 words a day. Some are like, 4 hours. I think Walter Mosley does like 3 hours and then he's done, whether he's on book tour or not. I try to write a scene a day, a scene. It could be a short scene, it could be a page, it could be 4 pages, but we start somewhere, things happen, the circumstances change, and then the end of the scene, we go somewhere else.
Anybody else?
What started the love affair with France? Well, I'm from a Midwestern family. We have no French blood at all. I'm a mongrel. But my father was a Francophile. I don't know why. And my grandfather studied art in Paris on the GI Bill in the 50s. And they would talk at dinner, you know, I don't know, maybe. And then my dad sent me to a French Catholic school where the nuns, when we had nuns that were uniforms, you know, the Sally Field hats, they spoke to us in French. So, of course, that's archaic French. You know, I learned when I went to Paris, like, no one says those words anymore. But I don't know, there was just there. And when I got to go to Paris the first time, backpacking and hitchhiking, I met Romain Gary, the French author, and he took me to a cafe and gave me my first espresso and a cigar, and I went, this is the writer's life, okay. I don't know, but I had that. I don't know why, but it wasn't until many years later when I went to the Marais with my friend, whose mother was the hidden Jewish child there, that I went, I need to know more about that. So that's what happened, long story short. I'm not French. I don't have an apartment there. I couch surf.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much for your attention. Appreciate your coming. So I'm assuming that is John up there? I can't see past the bookcase. How many numbers did we do, John? We didn't do numbers. All right. Well, I have a book to give away, and now we're going to have to come up with a system. Why don't you ask a question, and whoever can answer it correctly. I have a book, which I have to tell you truthfully, because there are 1,000 new adult fiction books publishing in March. I just sent out our newsletter, and I read all the books that we carry in our newsletter. I read all the event books. I do our book club books. And probably my maximum is right around 200. I can't do any better than that. And I was really put off by the description of this book called Baby X, but proving that you never can tell what's between the covers of a book unless you actually open it and read it, it turned out to be fabulous. And she is going to be here a week from Wednesday. She is the... Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.